Good afternoon, everybody. Call the Finance Committee to order. Today is Wednesday, February the 5th. The time is 1:37. I'm late. Today we're going to continue some of the overviews with both the Department of Education and Early Development and then the Department of Commerce and Economic Development. So we're going to start with education. So if the commissioner, if you want to join us at the table and bring up your backup, and we'll go ahead and get started. We're going to adhere to my normal process of holding all questions until the commissioner has an opportunity to run through his full presentation. Otherwise, we never get through the full presentations. So with that, commissioner, identify yourself and your staff.
Okay, thank you, Chair Osterman. For the record, my name is Mike Hanley. I'm the commissioner for the Department of Education and Early Development.
And Heidi Teschner, Director of Administrative Services for the Department of Education and Early Development.
One second. I keep forgetting to take roll, so to speak. So present today is the Representative Munoz, Representative Guttenberg, Representative Costello, Representative Osterman, Representative Wilson, Representative Thompson, Representative Newman. We have a couple of people. Representative Holmes is out sick, and Representative Gurr is going to be late, but he will come. Hopefully the rest of them will show up as we go through the process. Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair Osterman. Our department is broken down into four core services that drive the work that we do. The first one, as you can see them listed there, the first one is public school funding and our responsibility to ensure that the funding is appropriately distributed to the recipients based on legislative intent, which also includes distribution of federal funds. These include our K-12 formula, and as you'll see later in the presentation, this distribution is about 95% of our budget, or about $1.6 billion. The second component is our fiscal accountability, compliance, and oversight. And with that fund distribution, we have a responsibility to provide oversight and effectively manage those funds. And this is done through monitoring, ongoing audits, and general oversight. And this does include our state funds, federal funds, and other interagency and other funds and grants that we may receive. Third component is school effectiveness programs. This is where we assist districts in the work that they're doing to deliver instruction to our students. We do this through technical support that we sometimes offer from Juno, but we also do this with ground support. And some of these are statewide efforts that we make. We've made efforts in regards to this around the performance scholarship. We do curriculum alignment institutes in the summers. Most recently, our trainings have been around our new standards for our students and teacher evaluation programs. So we provide support statewide. We offer that statewide to districts that want to avail themselves of that. And we also offer specific supports based on need, and that includes our mentoring programs and our coaches for districts that have demonstrated need in those areas. And lastly, we fulfill our mission by providing opportunities for active partnerships. And those are partnerships between the state and outside entities. The most common ones that the legislature is aware of that come before you are programs like ANSEP, the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program through the university, Parents as Teachers, Best Beginnings, the Arts Council, Professional Teaching Practices Commission, the university.
And Commissioner, I'd like to recognize Representative Stoltz and Representative Edgeman have joined us. Thank you.
This slide takes those core services that I just mentioned and breaks them down by budget amounts. You'll see that the largest component, the 80%, is our funding direct to school districts, largely formula-driven, and this is where our BSA, our base student allocation, is. 14% of the budget is accountability, compliance, and oversight. It includes our assessment programs, our administrative services. All of our personal services are in this component. $206 million of this component is actually federal funds. 4% represented there are our active partnerships, and 2% that are the school effectiveness programs. Those include our state system of support, which are our coaches, mentors, the implementation of the Work Keys program, our Literacy Institute, and those components. One of the measures that we use to see how we're doing is around the Alaska Performance Scholarship. And you can see here some of the, you know, this has been in place now. We've got three cohorts of students who have had access to the Performance Scholarship. Probably the biggest thing to notice here is the APS eligible graduates that's listed at the bottom. That's represented by the red line. You will see that in 2011, we had 28.8% of our students eligible for the Performance Scholarship. It has remained the same in 2012, about 27.2, and then in 2013, it was 31.6. That is where we anticipated being at the beginning of this program. Interestingly, we've been able to hold on to this percentage of students eligible even as the Performance Scholarship requirements have ramped up. So it was phased in with additional requirements as time went on. So even with that, we've got 31% of our students eligible for that Performance Scholarship. Another one of our measures is our graduation rate. This represents our four-year graduation rate, which is how we compare ourselves to other states. There's a common formula on how the graduation rate is determined. It's a four-year cohort. You see a steady increase there. The last few years represent about a 2% increase. It is our goal, and you've heard the governor speak to it as well, that our goal is to hit 90% by 2020. So right now, we are at 71.6%. We've been gaining about 2% a year. At this rate, we've got about seven more years. We'll be pushing about 86% by 90-90 at this rate. So we're on track. We'd like to see that increase slightly. This slide has two sets of data, one in table form at the top and a separate one in a graph form at the bottom. At the top, you'll see that our budget is broken down into basically two components, the K-12 formula programs. And if you slide all the way to the right-hand side of that, you'll see almost $1.4 billion. Our K-12 formula programs represent 1.4 out of the total $1.7 billion of our budget. Our agency operation below that is $310 million. And if you look at the component under agency operations on that same line, and I'll just point it out here. So here's our total agency operations, but if you look back, I think it's significant to note, and I'll recognize it later as well, that of that $310, $213 million are federal funds in our agency operations. At the bottom of this slide, it represents fund sources. 85% of our budget is general fund, with federal funds recognized there, and other funds which are interagency receipts, things like teacher certification receipts and things like that. The previous slide looked at fund sources. This slide looks at how those funds are spent. 95% of it is in grants, such as foundation formula, pupil transportation, school debt reimbursement programs. The federal funding is also in there that funds programs like child nutrition. It also includes our active partnerships that I've mentioned, things like ANSET. The 3% personal services, the 3% other lines represented here are contractual obligations and responsibilities that we have, and a very small part of that is travel. This includes things like our assessment contracts for the assessments we do statewide, and the contractors that help us deliver services. Those are coaches and mentors. And 2% of this of our budget is personal services. At the bottom left, you'll see our position count. And these include, when we look at the people who actually run our program over here at the Gold Belt building, we have about 120 employees. But we also have employees at Mount Edgecombe, ACPE, that Diane Behrens represents, our Talking Books Library up in Anchorage, libraries, archives, museums. So we have employees all over. This count here represents a reduction of two full-time positions and one non-perm position as we've created efficiencies within the department and look for budgetary restraints that we could incorporate. The graph on the left is simply The general fund operating budget. And again, it's 95% going out in the K-12 formula, with 5% of that being agency operations. When we look at agency operations on the right-hand side there, by fund source, you'll see that our agency is 68% federally funded, 23% of those are general funds, and 9% from other. And it goes back to the numbers that I shared with you earlier from the table on slide 3. Looking at the governor's FY15 budget, the K-12 foundation formula, as has been in place the last couple of years, has been $25 million for one-time funding. In the past, it's been specifically targeted for energy, but basically allowed for districts to use as needed. And although it's distributed by a formula, by our adjusted average daily membership, which is AADM, it is outside the formula. It's one-time funding. The second component is our support for boarding homes. There's a $961,000 increase. And if you remember last year, there was a conversation around SB 47, Senator Coghill's bill, that increased the stipend, but it also allowed some things that the state board had already taken up in regulation to recognize the opportunity for variable-term programs. On the current programs that we had in place, Nanana, Galena, Mount Edgecombe, and there's one in Bethel as well, are what we would consider traditional residential schools. A student would come in the fall and stay there until the spring. We also recognized a need, and some of the programs that were already being implemented around the state without federal funding, to offer programs where a student could come in, get an intensive class for a month, get a class that they might not be able to get at their home school, come for 2 weeks, a month, maybe even a semester, and then go back home. So this $961,000 recognized an increase in boarding stipends for 4 new schools that applied and were approved by the department. Those schools are NACTEC, which is actually in Nome, but actually operated by the Bering Strait School District, the Kotzebue Magnet School, the Chugach School District, which operates the Voyage to Excellence, and they actually do that in Anchorage, but they bring students in from around the state, and the Denina House, which is a unique partnership between Cook Inlet Tribal Corporation and the Anchorage School District. The other components in the budget include the Alaska Higher Education Investment Fund. This is to fund the next cohort of students for the Alaska Performance Scholarship and the Alaska Advantage Education Grants, which are based on need rather than performance. And the last component there on this slide is the K-12 education formula to forward fund education for FY16. And that includes the pupil transportation funds that will be deposited into the PEF, the Public Education Fund. Continuing with the highlights of the operating budget, we have the pre-kindergarten grant fund. Last year it was at $2.8 million. It was reduced by $800,000. It is here because the $2 million was removed from the base and put as a one-time funding. We have gotten strong results from this program. It is the one place that we do directly support pre-K education. We also support funds through Head Start, which supports a federal program and some others. But we do see the value of continuing with this funding. There's $100,000 for MTAR money. This is deposited. This is a request that comes from the Mental Health Trust Authority to support their Alaska Autism Resource Center. The Alaska Challenge Youth Academy was removed from our budget and was moved into the Alaska Military or the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs as they requested, and there was some work here in the legislature, some supporters to get that moved into their department. And the last item there is a decrease of $646,000. That includes those three positions I previously referenced, as well as some other cuts that we are working to incorporate into the department. Looking at the 10-year plan highlights, and I will have a graph coming up shortly on this. This 10-year plan does not include any potential statutory changes or associated fiscal notes with those. If you look at the third bullet there, the foundation formula projects sustained funding, including the $25 million outside the formula. But it didn't, when we put this together, it didn't include a BSA increase. So it's simply, you'll see on our projection, it simply recognizes the $25 million one-time funding. It also includes operating costs due to inflation and adjustments for our contractual obligations that we have. Those contractual obligations include things like our dormitory management system over at Mount Edgecombe, janitorial services, our mentors and coaches. Our assessment contracts also have adjustments in them for inflation. And then it also includes startup costs and maintenance costs for the new SLAM project. We would anticipate that there's some funding required there. We're not exactly sure what that is yet. We're not sure just the extent of the efficiencies that we'll gain by moving out of three other facilities and moving into the one new SLAM project. The Sheldon Jackson Stratton Library update and the future Mount Edgecombe High School aquatics facility. Capital projects. In our 10-year plan, we have incorporated $50 million annually to recognize the need to continue to move down our capital list and potentially replace schools. This year, we have Queethluck as our fourth out of five schools that are listed on the Kasaili settlement. But even beyond the Kasaili settlement, we would anticipate needing to recognize the need to keep our schools in good shape. School district facility major maintenance projects. We have our major maintenance list. This recognizes $50 million annually in that as well. Interestingly, the last few years, we have been closer to $20, $25 million. It is actually not in the governor's budget this year. It's actually, we have not addressed tried to move down that major maintenance list. There's nothing on that incorporated into it this year, but it has been as high as $100 million and higher on given years. So what we wanted to do is try to be honest with a reflection of moving down those lists and, again, maintaining the facilities that we have around the state. Continued deferred maintenance for the Mount Edgecombe High School. There is one component in this year's budget, but looking at that continued need. And funding for the Sheldon Jackson Library renovation and full funding for the State Libraries, Archives, Museums. This slide looks at a 10-year plan, and it is the non-formula GF only. And numerically, I understand, I think it shows up as green, that the dotted line, numerically I understand where that dotted line comes from. It is simply a projection of looking at 06 to 15 and extrapolating that beyond and continuing on with an 8.1% growth. I know we've been scolded in the past for having a much shallower trajectory when we look at our line, but I do believe that coming before you now, it's much easier to project a shallower line than trying to predict a continued growth of 8.1% in our current situation. It makes sense to have that line numerically, but it doesn't make sense when you incorporate context into these numbers. It is probably worth noting that the steepness of the line between years 10 and 13, 2010 and 2013, include the inclusion of the performance scholarship, the introduction of ANSEP, early learning programs. There was a school performance incentive program in there. The Alaska Advantage program was also in there. The only big increases between 13, 14, and 15 were the performance scholarship and the Alaska Advantage program. This graph looks at all funds, and as I've mentioned in the past, when we look at only 5% of our budget agency, we can move that around a little bit, and it doesn't change the needle on this trajectory for this graph. As I mentioned, the graph does not include a BSA increase, but if I were to give you a hypothetical, and I say, well, let's put in the BSA that the governor has now introduced in his Alaska Education Opportunity Act. That bill represents $21 million this year, $14 million and $14 million, $49 million over the course of 3 years. If I were to incorporate that into this slide, it would increase the trajectory of that black dotted line by about the thickness of those dots. It just doesn't change much. So just because of the scale, when we're looking at the differences between $1.5 billion and $2 billion, we had $49 million to the BSA, and you don't see much. For us to hit the $2 billion mark, and I'm just trying to share the scale and why this looks the way it does, because I surely don't want to be perceived as being non-responsive to a request to put forward a 10-year plan. For us to move towards, let's say, a $2 billion mark, knowing that it's driven by foundation and formula and money that goes directly to districts, we'd be looking at an increase of about $1,600 BSA increase over the course of 10 years. And I'm not saying that's what it should be. That'd be about $160 a year. I'm not speaking to what it is or what it should be or what needs are, but that's what it would take to move this bar up. And we haven't seen that. We don't see that in a 10-year plan, not with what we've seen in the last few years. And so I'm just trying to explain why this graph is the trajectory that it is and what it would take. And my guess is that it'll fall somewhere. The actual one will fall somewhere between these. I would honestly anticipate it'll be somewhere closer to the one that we have than the one that projects upward at 3.7% increase. This slide shows two things. The bars show the total agency non-formula GF budget in dollars. This number includes, as I mentioned earlier, those increases includes things like parents as teachers and best beginnings. Theme-based education was in there a couple years ago. It also includes $8 million for the Performance Scholarship and the Alaska Advantage grant. The blue line represents 2% of our agency represents 2% of the state's agency's budgets. So when we look at non-formula, we have a relatively small agency with relatively few employees, and it only represents 2% of the state's budget. This slide, the blue bars on the bottom represent the non-formula, which was also represented on the previous slide. The red bars include the formula. You will see that they have leveled off the last several years as there hasn't been a BSA increase. There have been slight bumps because there have been bumps to pupil transportation and CTE funds, so you'll see a very slight bump there. And when you incorporate all the agency, the operating budget for the Department of Education, we move to about 25% of the overall state's 25%. Our agency represents 25% of the total state's budget as far as agency operations go. And I will stop there, and we're surely open to questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. We'll go to questions, but I'm going to start with a couple of them. The first one is on page 11, and the bottom bullet and the last sentence, I guess, future aquatic facility. What does that mean? Is there something that you've started? Is this a phased project? I'm just want a little idea of what that means.
There is a 50-meter swimming pool being built. We have not dug a hole yet, but we have begun a process of schematic design for a 50-meter pool at Mount Edgecombe based on legislative intent.
Okay.
The funding is not complete there. It is partial at this point, and so I've instructed the movement to get us to a point. We've actually have the site cleared and prepped. We have conceptual design, and I have instructed us to not start digging a hole until funding is complete.
Good suggestion. So then I want to go to page 4, and this is not a question but more of a comment, and I'm hoping that the subcommittee will take this up a little bit more. But I've always been concerned about the 70% that are not represented in this program. Mm. And that's a discussion I'd like to have the subcommittee take up and talk about. what efforts are being made there in as far as overall holistic look at what we're doing for education for all of our students instead of just those people that are qualifying for or are eligible for the APS.
Thank you. The report just came out. We can surely walk through components of it with the subcommittee.
We'll go to questions. Stoltz, Representative Stoltz.
Thanks, Osterman. Now, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, looking at your what your optimistic projections are for graduation rate, have we got some of the low-hanging fruit? It's pretty easy to get from 61.4 to 71.8 with minimal effort. You know, just like I guess I'll use an analogy. When your brother and mother were in elected politics, it was pretty easy for them to get 50%. They were good public servants, and probably a little bit door knocking, a little bit of effort, they'd get up to 70%. But just like every voter past 70% might not be that convincible, and it's a lot tougher, getting from 70 to 80 is a lot tougher effort than getting from getting the low-hanging fruit and the easier, more convincible students, and maybe they're minimal things. You get to that higher expectation. What are your expectations of resources you're going to use? That is a lot tougher threshold, whether you're talking about trying to convince another to get from nobody, unless you're unopposed, it's pretty tough to get to 80-90% of convincing every voter, even in the best district, even in the best school district. It's pretty tough to get to that without some incredible effort and probably resources and a desire among the student. If they don't want to be there, how much do we have to spend to keep them there, if that's the goal? And please flesh out how we're going to get to that high 90s number. And laudable effort, but what is it going to cost us? And is it the best money spent?
Through the chair, Representative Stoltz, I think you make a very valid point that I'm surely hoping that we're not going to see that yet. We're going to continue to see 2% growth. But at one point, we're going to get to a point where it becomes more difficult. We can work directly with students that are in the margins, that are on the edge, that are at risk, and bring them into the fold and help them be successful. But at some point, it does become very difficult. The work at the state level becomes really building capacity and helping districts understand or meet the needs that they see at their local level. And that's, it is a challenge for us directly to impact this at the state level. But we can try to make a difference with programs at the local level. So we're seeing different things happening in different school districts. And you're right, it'll be difficult to try to quantify just what it'll take at this point. Some are saying, look, we just need to focus on attendance. Some are saying, we need to focus on some drug issues that are and alcoholism issues that are in our community. Some are saying we just need new programs. I do honestly believe, though, that with a focus in our new residential schools that really are focusing on CTE components and seeing the value of how that reengages, especially young men and boys, we are surely hoping that that has a positive impact and will continue to move that needle forward.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Mr. Chairman, the recognition that it's tough. And one of my best friends in high school, you couldn't keep him there after ninth grade. And financially, he went out and started building a business, buying property in a growing area. And I would consider him a lot more successful. He said, man, you couldn't have paid. You could have given me money, and I wouldn't have stayed in school. I wanted out so bad. How much do you throw on an effort of somebody like that who was plotting their own success? I would never argue with what my good friend did because he's on just everyday savviness, business smarts. I couldn't go to business school and be as smart as he is in business. And maybe that's the aberration, but I certainly run into a lot of people in my community that I've served with people without advanced degrees. And my God, they're a heck of a lot more successful than I could have ever dreamt of being. Do we hold somebody back? The other thing, Mr. Chairman. And I don't want to tread into the education chairs, but I would sure like to see fleshing out of what our profile of students, what it costs or doesn't cost in comparison. Take a traditional school student. that's in a brick and mortar, take a charter school student, and take homeschool correspondent student, and add private school student there. And that might be a zero number, but that I think it's part of the debate we're having around here. And adding in the cost of debt reimbursement and facility costs and pupil transportation and the complete cost of the cost per student, and it's an exact science, but as we're having this debate and these discussions, it sure be nice to have some better information to talk about the issues instead of speaking anecdotally, which I'm going to make a confession. It's not too shocking. Sometimes I'm prone to use anecdotes at times, but because they're more useful than facts. And because I don't necessarily know the fact at the time, so it's not fleshed out. It's not always because of there's a lot of agreement there. That said, I'm always seeking more precise information. And how do you make the best decision if you don't know all the costs of educating that student, all the way down to, you know, I'm looking at in our debate about on whether or not there should be a broader school choice and allowing to spend. I think it's always stupid that there's kids that were driving to a public school and they're going right by a private school whose parents paid taxes down the street. Is that an intrusiveness into the public domain if you drop the kid off on the way there? The NEA does. They file suit in a second. But and you've dealt, and you may have been a member in the past. I don't know. But, I mean, it's reflexive. I've seen activist members and I'm not trying to open a scab or a fight. That one's already opened around the building. But how do we make those decisions without good information? And I will yield to the direction of the very able chair. I've just thrown out some ideas on the table, and I hope it wasn't an intrusion into your process. We're all working on it's a quarter of our budget. So, and I'll and the other thing is, in addition to that, I would ask your department, and Marcy was complaining that she wasn't very busy over there, so also throw in the PERS and TERS costs that we're adding as well, because that is part of our education costs on what that student costs us on the profile. And you recall the four categories I asked you? The traditional student, the charter school student, the homeschool or correspondence private, and I think you should add the boarding school student as well. Then that'd be five. So appreciate your latitude, Mr. Chair.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's a pretty good lead into my discussion. Welcome, Commissioner. In the amount of vocational educational programs that are available in probably middle school on up through high school, And I haven't seen the changes or description in your program here of where you want to prioritize on that. And I'd go back to some numbers that I remember when I chaired the Education Committee. They were around about half of the students who start high school graduated. Out of that, well, about 60%. They're up to about 70% now. But out of that group, about half actually attend or attempt to do a two-year program with either a certificate or an associate's degree. But again, very small number. I believe at the time it was 7%, down from 9% of those students who start high school actually do a four-year college program. I know that the numbers are relatively small, very large budget with the university and what they do. They do a lot of great work. But again, there always seems to be this thought that we need to send our kids to college. And again, less than probably 8 or 9% of the students who start high school actually do a four-year college program. And I'm disappointed in here to not see more talk about those vocational education programs. What I learned in high school, I was able to make a living with my families as a heavy equipment mechanic because I was introduced to that and learned how internal combustion engines work and such. And as a woodworker through their woodworking shop and welding and things like that, through the vocational skills that I learned in high school, and it introduced me to those skills, and I enjoyed them. So I wanted to learn more, and I succeeded and was able to raise my family that way. But I don't see any of your policies here where you're going to focus more on that vocational education program funding into the high school and middle school. How do you plan on doing that?
Through the Chair, Representative Newman, I didn't bring that up. It hasn't been a separate budgetary component, except for recognized, within the legislature a couple of years ago when additional funds were designated for CTE. So there is a component in VOTEC, which is part of the 20% block grant that goes to that, as well as the additional 1.5% that's in the formula. Probably the biggest focus that we have had, and because we do recognize the value of that, is trying to set up our residential schools that really focus on that. We hear it over and over again, especially coming out of Kotzebue. We've got a pretty strong program, and for students who take one course, they do so much better and graduate at such a higher rate, and then students who graduate or take two courses in CTE graduate higher than even the state rate. So we do recognize those, but we don't have specific separate components in the budget around CTE.
Just to follow up more, and Commissioner, the reason I get concerned is because math is generally one of the hardest classes to be successful in reading, and math is a compound of just about all those vocational skills when you do that, and you learn the viability of what those numbers mean. And is there a plan, do you think, in the process to try and put more of that in there? I'm trying to push you into that and
sure,
some discussion on vocational education, where we've got, you mentioned the regional learning centers, but still 75% to 80% of all these kids are in Fairbanks, Mattsu, and Anchorage.
To the Chair, Representative Newman, we surely support that, but and those decisions and those visions are largely driven locally. I know that Commissioner Bloomer is also working on that, and current Senator Bishop has a keen focus on that. So we are focused on it, but we're not driving anything specific. We're allowing and supporting those local decisions where they have those visions to move forward in that area.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry for being late. I was listening downstairs, but I apologize, Commissioner. Commissioner, what I'm worried about is a brain drain. Teacher or parents have seen teacher losses across the state, staff losses across the state the last 3 years, over 600. They see school districts compiling numbers of maybe over 200 staff losses this coming year. And some of them are saying to me, why would I raise my child here if there's no end in sight to these cuts? So first of all, has your department calculated what's needed in a BSA adjustment in order to avoid just next year's cuts, with the understanding that you want to keep ratios the same, so maybe some school district is having massively declining or increasing enrollment that affects it. But has your department done an estimate of what's needed in a BSA adjustment to avoid cuts next year, taking into account increasing and declining enrollments?
Through the Chair, Representative Guerra, we haven't done one recently. I did one a couple of years ago and worked through the superintendent's organization. What you'll typically find is 53 different answers on what it would take to keep programs in place, because it will include several different things. So I don't have current numbers in that regard.
To that point.
Sure.
So the governor has introduced a bill, and he's put a number to that. Is that, how did he get to the number if you don't have that information?
The governor took the initiative to, as he stated, climb out of the trench. For the last 3 years, he has said that targeted funds for targeted outcomes, and that's where the energy funds and things like that focus. He said, I'm also recognizing now that the needs we have in our school district, so I'm willing to put a BSA on the table. The one for $85 represents a 1.5% increase of the current BSA, and the governor also recognizes that as a modest increase, recognizing not only needs in districts but also the fiscal climate. So I don't think he determined that as being what all districts need. I think most districts would tell you that that won't totally alleviate the cuts that are potentially before them. But the governor did want to put it, start the conversation by saying, you know what, I am willing to put a BSA on the table.
And I only asked that question because of, for years, several years now, we've heard the governor say no more money for the BSA. So, Representative Guerra, sorry for interrupting
sure.
you there.
No, you're the chair, and I didn't mind the question, so thank you. Commissioner, I'll say I'm frustrated that we're the policy-making body, but it would be nice to have information from the department saying what you need, at least not to keep laying off staff, guidance counselors, career counselors, teachers. I don't see how that moves education forward. I heard a question the other day in this committee, which is, why do we not produce college-ready kids? Well, it doesn't help that we're laying off the people who are supposed to teach them. We've done some surveys. We'll share them with you. We'll get a legislative research report in the next few days. We'll share it with you. But I feel like it should be coming the other way around. You should be sharing that information with us so we can make an informed decision. The governor's $80 increase in Anchorage will result in roughly two-thirds to three-quarters of the layoffs they're already facing. In Fairbanks, we've understood that they're going to still face about three-quarters of the layoffs they're already facing. In Juneau, an $80 increase, they face still 80% of the layoffs they're already facing with. That's the information we have. I guess, is the governor willing to work with the BSA or somewhere outside of the BSA just to and this is just to stop next year's layoffs? It has nothing to do with restoring all the staff we've lost the last few years. I guess, is the governor willing to come up with some sort of proposal to stem the layoffs so we can tell families who would run businesses, who might be the next entrepreneur, whose kids might be the next entrepreneur, that you should stay here, that we're going to provide your kids with great schools? I mean, is he willing to discuss something so we can stop the layoffs?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, what I hear the governor say is, you know, I'm willing to put a BSA increase on the table, and I'm willing to incorporate it into a package that includes positive changes for education, and I'm anxious to have the legislature discuss this. I didn't hear the governor say, and in my conversations with him, I don't believe he said $85 is the number. That's it. That's all I want to talk about. I heard him say, very different from past years, as you recognized, that let's put this on the table. Let's put it on the table early. It hasn't been on the table. And I think short of the governor taking the initiative to do so, we might still be, you know, halfway through the session before, you know, a legitimate BSA increase was discussed and put on the table. So I think the governor was proactive in this case and said, let's talk about the BSA. Let's incorporate that into how we're going to change our education system.
Through the chair. Commissioner, I appreciate the answer. That wasn't the question I asked. The question I asked, and maybe you don't know, and it's not like a BSA increase hasn't been on the table. It just hasn't been on the table from the governor. Many of us have introduced proposals to stem the staff losses, but is he willing to have a discussion, whether it's through the BSA or something else that's creative, if the governor wants to go there, to do something that stems next year's layoffs so that we don't have a fourth year in a row of teacher, counselor, staff layoffs for the people who are supposed to teach the next generation?
So the chair, Representative Guerra, I believe he has made that commitment, and he is willing to have that conversation. In context, it's one of the reasons he didn't put the BSA separately. He incorporated it into a package that involves educational changes. And so, yes, he is interested in having that conversation.
Representative Munoz.
Thank you. Thank you. A couple of years back, the school districts around the state received about $500 per student in the federal stimulus money. Have you analyzed what the impact of that one-time funding is on districts that incorporated it into the base, and whether some I believe some did and some did not, and I think that's part of one of the larger issues that we're also dealing with, causing some of the immediate impacts that we're seeing.
To the chair, Representative Munoz, there are several districts that recognize that it was one-time funding and that incorporated into infrastructure, the built-up capacity, potentially with technology and with other things. There are others that said, you know, we can hire another counselor, we can hire more teachers. Those who hired more teachers found themselves suddenly lacking. Those who built it into their infrastructure find themselves in a better place. It would require, and I don't want to avoid the question, but it would require a conversation with every district to determine who did as was intended and who incorporated into some personnel costs and things like that. But I think the answer would be different, you know, in 53 different places.
Well, I'm concerned. Alaska funds at a very high rate. I mean, I think we can do more. But we often hear that the legislature is not doing enough. We look at statistics, and Alaska, I believe, per capita is either the first or the second in the highest amount that we fund. So it would be helpful to know why are some districts struggling more than others, and also why is the cost of delivery so much higher in Alaska? I mean, the obvious reasons are increased insurance cost, and it's more expensive to do business in Alaska. But it certainly would help us, I think, as we look at the data, to have that kind of information and really to have a kind of a fair analysis of what the cost and delivery of services are in Alaska.
Okay. I can work probably through the superintendent's organization to try to determine what those are. It's just very challenging to do this. Some operate very, very efficiently, and I think over the interim, both the House and the Senate heard districts that have created efficiencies and have made efficiencies and are operating very leanly and still very effectively, and others that haven't got to that point yet.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Gettinger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Commissioner. I'm looking at your slides on page 3. You've got two programs, the effectiveness programs and the accountability. Well, more than $250 million. What do you use for benchmarks, and what, how do you measure that, and what are the numbers for fiscal accountability and effectiveness in these programs? How are you measuring that? Just trying to find out what it is that you can turn over, that we can see, that we can judge and value the things that you're spending $250 million on.
So you're looking at the fiscal accountability, mm-hmm, and the
school effectiveness programs.
With our school effectiveness programs, although that's only $26 million out of that, our school effectiveness programs, we do have data around our institutes that we provide, the participation in those, also around our mentors and our coaching program and our state system of support. We have some data around the work that they're doing. With the fiscal accountability and compliance and oversight, it really comes down to our responsibility to make sure that that we're monitoring and our funds and auditing the use of our funds to make sure that they are meeting both state and federal guidelines. So what you'll get out of that component is largely audit types of reports to make sure that there is accountability for state funds and federal funds. And interestingly, I mean, it is a large part of, when we're looking at $1.7 billion, it is a significant task that we have and a significant responsibility we have to make sure that those funds are spent correctly. So you don't necessarily see the educational component pop out of that section. You will see it come out of the school effectiveness programs, but not necessarily the fiscal accountability.
If I can follow through. So when the numbers change, when the school funding levels change, do you see the accountability change when they're laying off an assistant principal or a, I mean, if you're laying off if a school district is laying off a teacher when that only has 20 teachers, one or two administrators, there's going to be a huge fluctuation in numbers in any of those programs. Do you see a number that could give you a value of what's changing?
Through the chair, Representative Gettinberg, not really. So we don't have measures that measure a local effectiveness at a school level. Those decisions are made at that level. Those accountability measures, there are local accountability measures and effectiveness measures, but aren't able to reflect the impact of one less teacher on student effectiveness directly.
So in a school district with 20 students and you lay off, and they're forced to lay off two teachers because of, we're not keeping up with inflation and the graduation rate changes, that would be a wonderful thing for us to have, to understand that. You're, $250 million between those two programs. There's got to be something measured in there that can translate to us that we can have to see the upside or the downside swing.
So we could provide graduation measurements. We have the our current SBAs, our standard-based assessments, so we can look at levels of proficiency across the range of the school of the students. So we can look at those levels and see if they're improving or decreasing. We do that on a regular basis, and we can surely share that with you. Taking that and translating it into cause is a little bit more challenging. And we probably have to have the conversation more locally. Is the cause a lack of teachers? Is the cause something else?
I mean, if I can, Mr. Chair, I was delighted that your assessment in COTS-TECH, a couple of Voc-TECH courses has a significant change for the graduation rate. I mean, that's a really nice thing to hear. But that's got to be something like that across the state and other places as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Got time for one more question. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I guess I want to remind everybody this is all about local control, so how much we want the department to go into the local districts. We pretty much have decided that we want them to be able to spend the money on things that are important. So it's very hard when teacher layoffs happen, whether it's because there's too much administration, too much somewhere else. So I just want to make sure what you kind of realize what we're doing on the subcommittee level is, the department, they take care of the federal money. They must be accountable for that, the assessment, and then put in data. Those are things that they must do. So the bigger question becomes for this group that we're going to bring back to you is, in my opinion, and you won't hear this out of me very often, I don't think you can cut any more staff at this point. At this point, it's programs. Do you think that the department should be doing mentors and specialists and these different bringing teachers in for those types of teacher developments? Because that's really what it's down to at this point is that the people they're using is to take care of the federal funding, the school accountability, the data part, which we all can agree that they need to do. So those are the things that we're going to be bringing back, to the committee is judging those programs and whether or not the district should be paying for that because maybe they're the low-performing schools and they should pay for that extra, why they bring themselves up, or we want to see the department step in and have maybe a different expertise to do it. But at this point, with this department, in my opinion, it's come down to judging the programs and the grants that go out from them and whether or not we feel it should be done by them. But at this point, they pretty much have cut, I think, as far as they can, staff members to do what they have to do with all the program, with all the money that comes into them. So that's what we'll be bringing back and answers to the questions that I wrote down.
All right. With that, we are at the end of the hour. We're going to take a brief at ease while we find the Department of Commerce.
That's it. Mikey.
going to call the Finance Committee back to order, please. We will now take up the Department of Commerce and Economic Development. Commissioner, if you want to join us at the table and bring up your backup or your lifelines or whatever you want to call them. We will go ahead and make your presentation, introduce yourselves and make your presentation, and we'll hold questions till you're done with your presentation.
Begin.
Okay.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Susan Bell, Commissioner of the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. With me at the table is Jeannie Mungle, our Administrative Services Director, and behind me is Deputy Commissioner Joellen Hanrahan and Assistant Commissioner Robbie Graham. Before I get into the detail of the slides, I'll just make a couple of brief opening remarks. I feel strongly the Department of Commerce is working hard to address many of the challenges that affect our residents, businesses, and communities. In particular, we have a number of agencies working to address the high cost of energy, addressing gaps in critical infrastructure such as roads, ports, communication, and rail. We are working towards creating demand and awareness for Alaska's goods and services in national and international markets. We're improving the business climate. I feel through the 4 years that I've had a chance to work with the department that we have made a number of changes, particularly cultural changes. We have a lot of new energy coupled with a lot of talented expertise, long history in the department. We've been very proactive with businesses, trade organizations, ANCSA Corporation, CDQ groups, community leaders, tribes, and more. I feel like we've been very engaged. We've been blind to departmental boundaries on a number of our programs, particularly when you look at our marketing, our infrastructure development, and our energy programs. So I'm pleased to begin to describe the department. First of all, on this slide, I'd like to highlight our mission, which is to promote a healthy economy, strong communities, and protect consumers in Alaska. There are 12 agencies in the department. The ones that are illustrated on the left and the right of the commissioner's office have a dotted line. Those are our corporate agencies. They include Alaska Energy Authority, Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation, the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board, the Regulatory Commissioner of Alaska. These six are distinguished in that they are more independent corporate agencies, and each one of them has a board or commission that directs their work. The department, by statute, has a seat on four of them, all but ABC Board, Alcoholic Beverage Control Board, and RCA. Along the bottom, in alphabetical order, you see the six corporate agencies, and that's the Division of Administrative Services, Banking and Securities, Community and Regional Affairs, Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing, Economic Development, and Insurance. I want to make a point before we move to the next slide, which is organized by our core services, to say that corporate agencies account for 57% of our budget, about $118 million, and core agencies 43%. This slide shows our core services, and I realize that the font is a little bit small, so I'll go around from the upper right. Our economic growth area represents 31% of our budget. That includes the Division of Economic Development, the Alaska Industrial and Development and Export Authority, and Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. These three agencies lead our economic development programs, and I'll be talking about some of their accomplishments and activities in a few moments. As you move to the right, green quadrant, sustainable energy represents 37% of our budget, and the Alaska Energy Authority and the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation are the two agencies represented in this section. On the left, in purple, strong communities is 15% of our budget. The Division of Community and Regional Affairs is responsible for programs in that area. And then in the upper left, consumer protection, 17% of our budget, includes banking and securities, corporation, business and professional licensing, insurance, Alcoholic Beverage Control Board, and the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. I'm going to jump right into to the mission of each agency and highlight accomplishments. I do want to point out for the Finance Committee members and the public that we do have copies of this document in committee hands and for the public. And for each agency, there's significant more detail than I'll be covering today about the programs, about the challenges, about the accomplishments, and budget detail. So again, turning to the Division of Economic Development, there's a considerable breadth to the responsibilities in this division. Its mission is to promote economic development opportunities. We have two sections, the development section and financing section. And to share a few highlights from FY13, first, the tourism marketing and new air connections contributed to a third consecutive year of growth. This is something that we've been talking about in this committee and others. In total, we had 1.84 million visitors, and that's full year, not just the summer. But the vast majority of our visitors do come in the summer months. That compares to about 1.96 million in 2007 and 1.95 million in 2008. So again, between changes in cruise patterns, economic challenges, and others, we have been working towards recovery in this industry. And it's significant because it's our second largest private sector employer behind seafood. We also celebrated something new and exciting. We've had new domestic and international air carriers in Alaska this last year. But the Iceland Air flights that began into Anchorage in May connected Alaska with more than 20 destinations in Europe. So we have direct flights. This is a considerable advantage for people coming through Iceland from the European countries. We made a commitment as the airport worked to offer the incentives that they do at the airport. We made a commitment to increase our marketing in European markets for two consecutive years. And so we're now in the second year of that. And I remember sharing an example last year at about this time of the Mid-Atlantic Summit. This is an event that Iceland Air puts on. They have 400 to 500 travel agents, tour operators. And why I like this example is that we made a considerable splash about Alaska on many fronts last year. We had a lot of private sector and destination participants. At the final night banquet, we served wild troll-caught king salmon. We had matzu veggies. We had distilled products from our Alaska distilleries in Alaska. We had Bamiwa performing a beautiful slideshow. So, again, I like this example because it's how we try to approach our marketplace when it makes sense to showcase more of the state. Also in this bullet, it now feels like a lot longer than a year ago, but about this time last year, we were watching the two Top Chef episodes that were filmed in Juneau. We reached $2.6 million for each of those episodes with an ad value of more than $5 million. And that was a significant effort of our tourism marketing public relations program with a lot of support from ASME. The third bullet, the Opportunity Alaska, I want to touch on mining. Just this last week, we had a team in Vancouver for the significant mineral show called Roundup. We're getting ready to go in early March to Toronto to the Prospector and Developers Association of Canada. And I make a point of mentioning this because not only do we get considerable exposure for Alaska, but we took our marketing to a new level in this last year. We have new promotional materials with our trade show booth, with our brochures. We'll be sure you have copies of those. We also began something called Opportunity Alaska, and we're showcasing private sector in an afternoon-long forum where people, especially when you go to Toronto, which is where people go to get their financing, it's an important place to really showcase what we have going on in Alaska and why people should invest. We've been really working to increase manufacturing. I touch on a brand new program this last year, the U.S. Manufacturing Summit that the National Retail Federation and Walmart put on. We continue. There was a change with the film marketing program where the Tax Credit Administration is now in the Department of Revenue, but we continue with the marketing. Our Commercial Fishing Revolving Loan Fund, that's a significant portion of how we interact with the business community and residents throughout the state. We had 283 loans. Of that, 200 of them were in commercial fishing. And I know with a pending bill, I wanted to be sure that I mentioned that 34 of the loans in the commercial fishing revolving loans were in fuel efficiency, and 7 were in our product quality incentive program. As I move to ADA, again, also part of our economic growth core area, the Alaska Industrial and Development and Export Authority, we have three main programs. Loan participation, where we're working with the commercial banks in Alaska, we're able to reduce the risk. Project development, where ADA owns or partially owns a project, and we have a number of them, ranging from the shipyard in Ketchikan to the ore terminal in Skagway. Just last week, a new facility was dedicated in the Anchorage area at the Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson or J-Bear, and that's the Camp Denali Readiness Center. This is a new facility that was built by ADA, is leased to the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, and it's to house the Coast Guard. So we recognized a couple of years ago the legislature authorized some new powers for ADA. We're able to build projects of this nature to lease to the federal government. It was an exciting day. Also, similarly with the Ketchikan Shipyard, it's the second to the last bullet here in the PowerPoint. We've partnered with the private sector. Vigor is a Northwest company that is managing Alaska Ship and Dry Dock at this ADA-owned facility. We've been able to leverage private, state, and federal funds over the last few years. And so not only do we have an exciting expansion of the shipyard, more than nearly $80 million, but we were able to dedicate a ship that was unique. It was the Arctic Prowler, 135-foot freezer longliner. It's the largest commercial fishing vessel built in Alaska. So this is a significant accomplishment for the shipyard, for Ketchikan, and for ADA. So again, that's examples of what we do in our project development work. We also have conduit revenue bonds, the Sustainable Energy and Transmission Supply Fund, and more. So again, ADA is very engaged with businesses, with banking banks, and with communities. At the end of June, we had a net asset value of $1.1 billion. We paid a dividend of a little over $20 million to the state. I do want to point out something, and it's discussed in more detail in the budget overview book, which is there has been a change in accounting practices. The board declared a dividend for FY15 of $10.6 million. There was a Governmental Accounting Standards Rule 31, we have to recognize at year-end our assets as if we had sold them. So ADA had a paper loss of $17.5 million. It's on paper only, but it did affect, it did diminish the dividend when you look at prior years. Again, I think that this is cyclical, and I just want to assure the Finance Committee and the public that that we needed to comply with this federal rule. And I anticipate that as we go forward, that we'll see that fluctuation. But again, it was a paper loss only. ADA, looking at its projects, created or retained more than 297 construction jobs and nearly 900 permanent jobs. Again, I cited the loan participations. We work with the banking community on those. And one of the things that I know we've you heard a lot about last year as the legislature passed Senate Bill 23. We're hard at work on the Interior Energy Project, which is ADA working with the Alaska Energy Authority, trucking gas into Fairbanks, building a liquefaction plant up on the slope and a regasification facility in Fairbanks, and importantly, working to build out the distribution system. So I'll move on from there to ASME, the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. ASME's mission is to increase the economic value of Alaska seafood resources. The export value of seafood is up nearly 85% in the last decade to $3.2 billion. That's first wholesale. One of the things that we focus on is maintaining Alaska seafood as a brand. We're second to beef. And there's an extensive array of programs in the Alaska Seafood Marketing. We do partner between our tourism marketing program and ASME. We also reach out to other agencies, such as Alaska Grown, which is in DNR, the Nutritious Foods and Schools grants. ASME helps with this DCRA-administered program, the Silver Hand program, which is in Department of Education. Again, there's logical ways that we do partner across the agencies. ASME has a presence in 21 countries. There's a focus on Japan, the European Union, Russia, China, and new this last year was Brazil. And we not only bring our message out to the marketplace, but we bring a lot of media, chefs, travel writers, seafood writers in to see what we offer, see how we catch the fish, understand our management, and understand, importantly, the wild, delicious seafood that we offer. Now I'm switching to sustainable energy. And I'll begin with the Alaska Energy Authority, which is a very straightforward mission of reducing the cost of energy in Alaska. One of the things that the legislature did was establish a goal of 50% of our electrical generation would be from renewable resources by 2025. And two big areas that are working towards that, one is the Renewable Energy Fund. It was recently reauthorized for another decade, and to date, from rounds 1 through 6, we have $227.5 million in more than 250 projects awarded. Round 7 recommendations have been scored, and they're in your hands for legislative action this session. So, and then the bottom slide, while I'm talking about renewables, we definitely are making continued progress on the Susitna-Watonna hydroelectric project. In FY14, we had a $95 million capital budget. We had 58 field studies underway through summer 2013 and now into winter 2014. And there's a considerable focus as we're working through the FERC licensing process on environmental, socioeconomic, and cultural resources. We also administer the Power Cost Equalization Grant Program in AEA. We've been working in many communities on rural power system upgrades. We worked with Denali Commission more than a decade ago to establish a list of projects, and 114 were on the list, 53 of them have been completed. And just to share how profound this can be, fuel consumption in a community can drop by a third when we put in a more modern, efficient power system. A smaller program this last year is the Emerging Energy Technology Fund. This was co-funded between the Denali Commission and the state, and AEA awarded 16 projects funding. And it is smaller. It was a little less than $10 million in total, but it is a focus on looking forward. It's one of the innovative things that we're doing, looking for technologies that are not yet used in Alaska. Possibly because of our temperature, our small communities, our distances. But again, it's something where we're working on all fronts in the energy area. The Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation continues its considerable work. This last year, AGDC moved into the Department of Commerce, and I have to really commend both AGDC staff and the Administrative Services team for the transition. There's a lot of work that goes administratively with that. Their focus is to advance an in-state natural gas pipeline to deliver natural gas and other non-oil products for in-state use, working towards what you'll hear AGDC staff and others call pre-FEED, so pre-front-end engineering and design for Class 3 cost estimates. Our goal is to get to an open season in early 2015, so there's extensive work going on. And the new board, this had been a subsidiary, as you probably recall, of the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. The new board was seated this last fall, and we're well underway, meeting twice a month right now. So we're pleased with the work, and I know there's been a big focus at the start of the legislative session on gas, so I'll wait for any questions on AGDC's role for later. We move to the Division of Community and Regional Affairs. I think it's important to begin with recognizing that we have a constitutional responsibility in Article 10 to advise and assist local governments. We do a lot of different programs through our local government specialists. We assist with elections, bulk fuel management, local options for the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board if a community wants to be dry or damp. There's a lot of personnel management, financial management. We can assist communities with setting up QuickBooks and helping people with the training. Also, an important program, and this is we get a considerable amount of our funding federally through the Rural Utility Business Advisory Program, or RUBA, as we often call it. In FY13, we assisted nearly 200 communities, did a lot of training. More than 200 utility managers. But what's important is that there's a number of indicators that we monitor that, both from a training perspective and an indicator, because if people need to have some basic skills from budgeting, from rate setting, billing, reporting, personnel management. And so it really goes hand in hand with our local government assistance. So also near and dear to many communities and nonprofits are the name recipient grants that the legislature establishes through the capital budget. Our grant administrators work very, very hard. We have $1.8 billion under grant administration through DCRA. We've got more than 2,300 state and federal grants. Each grant administrator has a workload of almost several hundred right now. So again, I also want to mention something that I think is important, and that is these grants are reimbursable, and we have somewhere between, you know, each grant varies at what pace they're working towards, but we have probably well over half of this funding still in the pipeline. So I know when people are thinking about capital budgets, they're thinking about construction activity and economic activity, a lot of this will still be continuing into the future. We also have $112 million distributed through payment in lieu of taxes, national forest receipts, fisheries business tax, fisheries landing tax. Representative Edgman, a couple of sessions ago, had combined what had been a bulk fuel revolving loan program in AEA and a bulk fuel bridge program. And I highlight that because now we have 65 communities that are coming to DCRA. They now only have to fill out one set of paperwork, go to one agency, where previously you had to go to one, wait for a denial, and go to the other. So, again, while I highlighted AEA and AGDC under energy, you can see that there's a fuel watch, and the bulk fuel loans also bring DCRA into working on energy things. My last comment on DCRA before I move on is this, the digital mapping initiative. I think it's really important to recognize that when we're able to invest, as we are right now, in the North Slope and Northwest Arctic Borough in mapping, we're able to give them modern digital maps. These can be used by the communities, tribal organizations, nonprofits, and others. And it can cost well over $100,000 if you had to do this on your own. So we're helping provide a tool that's used by many people. Turning to banking or consumer protection, which is the last, we're moving into the last section where I'm going to be describing the accomplishments and activities. I'll pick up the pace here. The Division of Banking and Securities has the mission of protecting consumers of financial services and promoting a safe and sound financial system. We have a lot of contact with many different entities. We're not only working with state chartered banks to license them, to examine them, we also have a consumer finance section here where we're working with mortgage lenders. There's many, many mortgage lenders in the state. Also the securities, anybody that's selling or advising securities in the state of Alaska is regulated. And so, again, lots and lots of contact with people that are involved in our financial community. Moving to corporations, business, and professional licensing, again, high contact with lots of people throughout the state. CBPL's mission is to ensure competent, professional, and regulated commercial services are available to Alaska. The first bullet, we highlight that we renewed 35,000 business licenses and nearly 30,000 professional licenses. It's a 3% increase over the prior year, but also when you think in total of the licensed public, that's just with business license and professional licensing, it's well over 130,000. So, again, a lot of contact. We've been working to increase the transparency of our financial information, increase the communication with the boards particularly, and the programs that are in the professional licensing. We've also been working through our corporate entities to reduce the filing time. So, again, this is an area where when we talk about the business climate, the pace at which we do things and the information that flows is an area where we can make it easier for Alaskans. Turning to the Division of Insurance, we regulate the insurance industry to protect Alaskan consumers. Again, very high volume. There's insurance companies that are based in Alaska, insurance companies that are based out of state. Something that we've been very mindful of is recognizing that we have a small market in Alaska. We want competition for businesses and residents. And again, you can see in the quantity here, we issued a renewed 29,000 licenses. An area that I wanted to highlight is that now 95% are submitted electronically. So again, how we can be more responsive is an area that we're focused on. We opened and closed, opened 54 and closed 77 criminal investigations. And I didn't touch on the investigative powers of some or others, but I think it's so important, especially with insurance, that if you as a business or as an individual believe that you have a safety net there, you want to know that the state is assisting, ensuring that it's viable. The last two of the agencies that I'm going to highlight, and we'll in a moment turn the microphone over to Jeannie to talk about this from a financial perspective. The Alcoholic Beverage Control Board now has had has been in our department for 2 years. Its mission is to protect the public from alcoholic beverage abuse by enforcing state laws regulating alcoholic beverage commerce. And we highlighted that licensees achieved 89% compliance with underage drinking-related laws. It's a steady increase over now in the fourth year. And 22 package stores, an increase of 7, are qualified to provide written orders from rural local option communities. That, again, DCRA, working with communities and the ABC board, helps communities have the elections that are necessary and the enforcement that communities determine, you know, at a local level. The Regulatory Commission of Alaska, its mission is to assure viable utility and pipeline services provided with just and reasonable rates to consumers in Alaska. There's been a big focus in RCA in terms of timeliness, and we've highlighted a couple of things here in terms of a Hillcorp application, revised their telecommunication regulations. Again, it's been a big focus in the time that I've been with the state is timeliness. I'm going to close in a similar way that I had begun my portion of this, and that is just we fully recognize the challenges that there's so many strengths that we have to offer in Alaska, but we do have challenges, and as we look at them from gaps in infrastructure, high cost of energy, uncertainty, federal regulatory delays, or just geographic scale, importance of keeping awareness in the marketplace. I just want to underscore my comments that I opened with, which is that I think our department and our agencies working together with the public are really focused on actions that we can take control of to make a difference in our communities and economy. So, again, I'm going to have Jeannie run quickly through some financial data and turn it to you for questions.
Hello, committee. For the record, my name is Jeannie Mungle, and I'm the Admin Services Director for the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. And the current slide before you is a reflection of the budget decrease between FY14 and FY15. And I'll just go through the different bars with you briefly. Under the unrestricted general funds slide, that reflects a roughly $7.2 million reversal from unrestricted general fund as a result of power cost equalization. We increased the designated general fund line as a result of the PCE, so it was basically an endowment fund funding change. Other funds, we have decreased those lines as a result of unneeded interagency receipt authority, and federal funds we're experiencing or witnessing a tiny reduction as a result of ERA funds and other federal funds that are no longer available to the department. Okay, the next slide. This chart represents the budget by line item, and as you will see, personal services, we have a experience between fiscal year 14 and 15 an increase. It's primarily due to salary and healthcare increases. The travel line, as you will see, between FY14 and 15, we've experienced a decrease, and it's primarily due to a one-time increment for the military training, a fiscal note related to military training. The military training credit fiscal note, it was a one-time fiscal note. Services, as you can see, contractual services, we've experienced between the fiscal years a decrease of $5.3 million. Commodities, we're also experiencing a decrease between the fiscal years. Capital outlay remains stagnant, and grants and benefits were slightly up. Okay, the next slide. As a result of the programs that ADA has implemented, many jobs have been created. The commissioner spoke to that earlier. The target being 500, ADA has historically surpassed the target of 500 permanent jobs as seen on this slide and by the various fiscal years. This slide reflects the target and measured outcome by fiscal year of communities providing essential public services. Okay. The next slide is the represents the agency's 2.7% share of general fund. Most of the peaks that you'll see on the bar graph relate to power cost equalization, tourism, and Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute activities. The next slide represents funding source changes over a course of fiscal years. Note the decline in federal and general funds.
And I'll make closing comments for the last couple of slides. They're similar with this first chart from Ledge Finance, Legislative Finance Division, being general funds only, and then you see all funds here. And there is a difference between Legislative Finance Division shows what would happen over the next decade if we had a continued 8.5% growth. As I highlighted in a couple of my comments, so the department's been very dynamic. We've had new divisions brought in. We've had some changes in terms of things like power cost equalization fund, what's done with general fund, what's done in the capital versus the operating budget. So there have been some spikes. So legislative finances, green dotted chart shows if we continued 8.5% growth, our projection is flat. And I also want to point out a difference between methodology. At the department level, we don't include personal services because that's done at a statewide level, and it's certainly driven by the negotiations and other decisions made by the legislature. So, again, there are differences in methodology, but the information in those two charts is materially similar, and that brings us to the close of our prepared comments.
Thank you, Commissioner. Appreciate that. We'll go to questions here in just a second, but I've got a couple of comments I want to make myself first. And it won't be much of a surprise to you in reference to economic development and job creation and creating a stronger economic base in the state of Alaska. And I've asked both you and the governor on a number of different occasions to bring forward some kind of a plan to do that. Still waiting. And I don't know... You know, we as legislators can create a commission to go out and do that kind of work, and but if the administration doesn't believe in it or says no, they don't need it, then it really basically goes nowhere. And so it really is up to the administration and up to the governor to help us with economic development that creates a new economic base of some sort that we carry the state forward. Any comments there?
If I may, Representative Osterman, I think that our department takes very seriously the economic development responsibilities that we have, and we have talked since you know many times, including with the governor, about that, about the role and how we do our work. We're working towards what I call economic development foundations, certainly in terms of energy, transportation. We have a seat on the Workforce Investment Board and communications. The department was a recipient of federal grants. We led the statewide broadband task force. So again, I feel like these are fundamental levels that all departments are working towards. More specifically, when I look at our economic development programs and how we're working to diversify the economy, I did touch on some of the work that we're doing now, specifically with the gas line and the Interior Energy Project. But I feel like we have a number of programs through our marketing programs, our business development work, and our financing to really work to diversify our economy and strengthen it. And we have statutory responsibilities in tourism, seafood, forest products, minerals, film. But we don't just stop there. We're really looking at our energy industry. We're looking at manufacturing. We're looking at logistics and trade. We're looking at how we tell the world about Alaska as a place to invest, to create jobs. And again, we take it very seriously. Using the staff and financial resources that we're given, I go back to my opening comments about particularly in energy and marketing and in other ways that we're building and diversifying the economies. I feel very proud of the work that we do.
And I appreciate that, and I do think you do a lot of work in reference to what you have. But I do believe that there's another step in there that you've not taken, and I continue to push for some type of a public-private sector group that actually helps us, direct us, and works towards what the economic growth of the state of Alaska in the future is going to be. I'll leave that one there. I'm going to go to commercial fisheries, which won't surprise you either, because we have quite a number of conversations about what's going on in the commercial fisheries. And I'll start with page 4 of your presentation, the economic growth and division of economic development. Nowhere in there does it say anything about commercial fisheries, yet we just had the largest catch of fish in the state of Alaska that we've ever had, and dollar value included. And I realize why it's probably not in your comments here that we are doing something with fisheries, because it is the Department of Fish and Game that's doing that and working on making sure that we have a renewable resource that's continuing there. But to produce the largest catch that Alaska's ever had, that's jobs. And whenever we talk about creating economic development across the state and making it sustainable for people to live here, it's jobs we talk about and having jobs. I go into your booklet here that you highlighted when you first started, and I go to page 29 and 30, and I see almost a full page of discussion about tourism and moving forward on tourism. And then I see 5 lines in here about fisheries in this Department of Economic Development. I recognize that the oil patch is our biggest industry, dollar value. And I also recognize tourism is probably number 2 now. And it's number 2 because of this kind of effort, a full page versus what you're talking about, 5 lines on commercial fisheries. The number 3 employer in the state of Alaska is fisheries, yet there's very, very little in this whole program that you're talking about today about what you're doing to increase the economic growth in that industry. And it frustrates me. I'm not here to bash anybody, or I'm not here to bash any other industry, but on the other token, in the number 3 industry in the state of Alaska, it was the number 2 industry until you guys put a lot of effort into tourism and made it number 2. And I'm not bereading tourism. It's one of the most natural things we should be doing, and I applaud you for the effort on tourism. But I don't applaud you on the effort on commercial fisheries as economic development in your Department of Economic Development. So I'd like you to kind of respond to that a little bit, but I don't expect much of an answer at this point in time, I guess.
I appreciate your candor as well as the opportunity to add a little more detail, and I do.
Let me add one more thing. Alaska Seafood Marketing, which is covered in here quite well, Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute is a board outside of your purview, other than the fact that you or your assistant attend those meetings and have input into it. But that's all industry-driven. It's all industry taking money out of the back of their pocket to make that happen. On their own, without your help, your department, basically other than to attend the meetings and be part of I understand economic development, I understand marketing, but the effort of the department towards economic development is where I'm at, not just saying you're going to sit on the board of the Marketing Institute. So.
Again, appreciate the opportunity to add some more detail. And one of the things that ASME did do is the economic value of Alaska seafood, recognizing that 64,000 people are directly or indirectly employed in the seafood industry. It's a $6.4 billion industry. So from our perspective, it is the state's largest private sector employer. From the tourism the tourism statistics that we monitored, we look at tourism as the second largest private sector employer. For that, in addition to the pride that we do take with ASME and a lot of the co-promotion, I was remiss in mentioning a few things that we do in specifically in the Division of Economic Development. As I mentioned, the loan program. 283 loans that are in the Division of Economic Development, 200 of those are in commercial fishing, and I think that it's a significant activity. Also, this last year, I was very proud of the work that Commerce led, working with Labor and Fish and Game, but the statutory responsibility was with Commerce on the decennial review of the CDQ program. And that's important when you look at the communities that are located near the Bering Sea. We needed, in order for the community, for those CDQ groups and to remain eligible for the quota, to be sure that we did. We had a new responsibility under the Magnuson-Stevens Act to do an analysis of the jobs, the training, the investments, the adherence to the management plan, and that was taken very seriously. That was completed, and the documents were posted last year. That was done by the Division of Economic Development. Also, I'm very pleased, we not only brought over Joe Jacobson, who had been with ASME, for the breadth of his experience, but his understanding of many other industries. One of his first things as he was filling vacancies was to be sure that the fisheries development position that we've had vacant was filled. So I as we look at underutilized species, as we look at how we can complement what ASME is doing on the marketing front, I think that's a very important role that we have in the Division of Economic Development. And we also recognize that the fishing industry, there's a full supply chain, again, from the transportation piece, the harvest piece, the marketing piece, but there's other business aspects of it. So again, Representative Osherman, I clearly recognize the importance to Alaska. I personally have been proud to stand with ASME in Brussels and Boston and Asia, but also by the multi-agency effort through this last summer, as we felt that there was a potential limit from Walmart's actions on access to their 4,000 U.S. stores, the governor's office, myself, ASME, Fish and Game, and others had many meetings, some in Arkansas at their corporate headquarters, some in Alaska, and we were really pleased to come to the resolution that we did get to early in this year, and that was because it's really important that there's not any mark against the sustainability of our seafood. And then from a business aspect, we were there every step of the way to make sure that message got through and we got to the result that we did. So I was remiss, I think, in the organization of my slides and wanting to be sure I was timely, but do not let that be a reflection of our department's position on the industry.
I'm sorry, but I don't see it. Yeah. And I understand what you're saying about the marketing aspects of it, and that's fine. That marketing aspect of it keeps our wild fishery moving, but it doesn't necessarily create new jobs and expand the fisheries as we have it right now. And you talk about the loan program, but the last report I had, where we've tried to increase the economic growth through the CQEs and the mirror and the aquaculture side of it, the last report I saw said zero loans through that. And now whether that's something because you don't have a fishery person on board to help create the those loan programs or get those new fisheries moving, I don't know. But we can only put so much money out there and do so many things unless the administration is actually pursuing and pushing. And we've talked about the ability for seaweed. It's a multi-billion dollar industry across the world, yet we have nothing. We've talked about whelks, which are canned and eaten all over Asia. We have nothing because nobody's pushing for the economic development side of it. It's frustrating to see that position, the one position for fisheries that you've had for a number of years, still being vacant compared to, again, and I'm sorry for those who are strong supporters of tourism, which I am a strong supporter of tourism, to be comparing the two, but how many people do you have employed in tourism? And so it's just a little frustrating from this side of the table to sit here and watch it. I won't berate it any further than that. We've got other people who are interested in asking questions. Representative Stoltz, followed by Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I'd probably just slightly echo on some of the issues on probably could have been a little bit more punch on the economic development commerce side of this. And I'm looking at ABC board, which is a small issue in the whole scope. But the discussion in this committee wasn't about enforcement actions. It was about why isn't this board helping small restaurants and other? It was a total inattentiveness to helping the business promotion side, and Representative Newman and I saw that issue in the Matsu Valley, and we heard anecdotes and real-life stories about, it was a police agency, and very important that we have the consumer protection and public safety functions of it, but it totally ignored the fact that the food and beverage industry and employs a lot of Alaskans who are often the first entrance, whether it's the folks coming in from the correction system. A lot of restaurants probably couldn't run without halfway houses. That's your most reliable. I guess most customers probably don't want to know that. But that said, that's why the legislature. If you look at all the debate and the discussions, there was a move to move that department. And I would like to have seen a discussion about what have we done instead of to promote businesses and allow them. What has been the streamlining? Do we have folks still hanging there with license issues that they were running into bureaucratic roadblocks within that agency? That wasn't a pleasant bill to carry because it was bad politics but important policy, like a lot of other things we do around here, and it was an easy one to get slapped around for, but then not to see any kind of discussion about a brew house in Talkeetna that employs 50 people or whatever. I don't even know the numbers. I don't drink, so I don't know. But it's an industry that a lot of people in my district are employed in. And some visit them, too, I guess. But what we hear in your what we read in the analysis is the issue about how many enforcements and the public safety. I think there was 100% concern and attentiveness that the reason that bill came up was about taking care of the commerce side of a large sector of our economy, and it's part of tourism, it's part of our daily life, and that one. And I'm not sure they still get it because there was a resistance to even go there. They fought you every step of the way on what they needed. What they demanded, I guess, despite the effort, that was a clear policy decision that the governor didn't veto, so it should have been the final say, but it's fought. What are we going to do to make sure that we hear more success stories about how it's now working over there? Because that was the reason. It was not a pleasant bill to go through. Because we had to deal with the mental health trust complaining about it, and still they brought it up during the first review this year. So that's just one small issue, but I guess it's almost emblematic of what Representative Osterman, the co-chair, said about industry or promoting the economic well-being, and that's a natural reaction of a lot of bureaucracies. I would go the other way, I guess, on tourism. I was kind of surprised we didn't have a lot of – I didn't read the book yet, but I would have thought on a major effort that there's a lot of flux on, there would have been a discussion about what the plans are for – if there are any for the how we're going to deal with the tourism funding issue. And you hear a lot of talk about what industry folks are asking and suggesting, and that's and I will rely, there's a very able person right to my left here that will probably force the discussion on that. But I would have liked to have heard that in the full committee. And again, it's in the detail in the book, but I didn't really hear any fleshing out on something that's a pretty large budget item in there. And that would have been nice to have heard of that. Insurance really bothers me quite a bit. We have, you talked, I want to ask the question that and answer after in the response is there's $65.8 million that you call in revenues or premiums and then penalties and fees. If you look at the source book, anywhere from 52 to 54, depending on the fiscal year, is on premiums. Where does the rest of that go? And does it go into the general fund? Does it go to other funds? But on that, I'm worried what is in the insurance industry in Alaska. You don't necessarily promote economic development, but you keep it from leaving, whether it's air carrier insurance. And I know you're familiar with a lot of these industries and the availability, tourism liability insurance. And if you look at one issue, my family is loaded with people in the that are working in the private sector and building and construction. And the number one issue, you can probably guess what they talk about. It's workman's comp. We've had, since Ms. Hall left, we've kind of had an influx. We had a temporary director there, Division of Insurance, and now I'm not sure who our go-to person is. And we've got workman's comp is brought up as one of the major issues that our private sector is concerned about. It's inhibitors to do business. A contractor can't, has to be careful of what types of jobs and what type of businesses they engage in because of the incredible increases in premiums for different risk portfolios of activities. So people aren't expanding because of the insurance constraints on workman's comp. And that, if you were to talk to small employers around Alaska, they would probably bring up workman's comp, and if you, probably first and foremost over a lot of other issues. And so I think the chambers, when they come down, I think they're going to bring up that as a critical issue. And that's what I wish we could have fleshed out, and we're going to rely on my colleague here again on that. But that's a much larger issue than just our budget process. It's a lot broader policy that we have to deal in. And I won't talk a word about fish because there's other people in the valley on this committee. So thank you, Mr. Chair. But the issue on the money.
May I make a brief, Representative Osman, Representative Stoltz. First, just working back up through the list, Marty Hester has been our deputy director of the Division of Insurance, and he is currently serving as our acting director. He is a go-to person, as well as myself or Deputy Commissioner Joellen Hanrahan, if there's any questions from the legislature or the public. And we're in the interview process. I'm looking forward to being able to announce a decision very soon. So, again, I want people to feel confidence that we're accessible with any insurance questions. Certainly, we're now in the third year of implementing the tourism marketing program. That's $18.7 million when you combine the general funds initially put in by the governor and then in the legislative budget process, as well as $2.7 million in receipt authority from funds raised through the program. That does tie into Representative Osterman's comments as well. When you look at, for order of magnitude, our tourism marketing coupled with our development, it's about $20 million of about a $26 million budget. So, again, I think the financial resources and the staff resources are reflective of the activities there. On the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board, a point well taken, and I know Representative Costello in our budget subcommittee, I saw her taking notes, and I know some of this is to help guide where we go through this process. But I certainly well remember the rigorous public debate, the legislature's intention and wanting the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board, which is 11 employees, 9 in Anchorage, 1 in Juneau, 1 in Fairbanks, to adopt the culture of commerce, be more pro-business. We also, I think it's important, this is the governor also wrote two letters to me as commissioner, making sure that as we did that, we didn't diminish the public safety elements. And
that's what the public record of the legislature very clearly reflected as well, not to diminish that mission.
Absolutely. So again, I did, just for a few things that were open comments, and we'll look to see if there's other questions.
Representative Guttenberg,
what about the insurance money? Where does the rest of it?
Oh, may I answer that, Representative, through the chair, Representative Stoltz? Insurance's budget is $7.6 million, and so the balance goes into the general fund.
So, out of Mr. Chairman, out of the in my numbers, you said you collect $65.8 million in premiums, penalties, and fees, and your revenue book says anywhere from 52.4 to a projection of 54.7. So that's about that's closer to about 10 or 11 million. You said 7 million goes into the GF.
Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Stoltz, through the chair. I think our budget request for FY15 for insurance is 7.6 million. So the balance from the more than 60 million collected, the balance goes into the general fund.
Those penalties go into the GF. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Guttenberg, followed by Representative Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll ask a question, but my staff and I will listen to the recording because I have to be at another meeting. I'm really concerned about broadband access across the state. As far as you know, they've got the broadband task force has come out with a bunch of recommendations. I don't know anybody that's feeling any changes, any reduction, any increase in competition. I mean, Verizon's coming in, and that's great, but The Ute Learning Center in Bethel pays $17,000 a month in broadband fees. I have limited access in where I am in the middle mile, as many, many people across the state do. E-rate, I forget what the rate calls for clinics, are exorbitant. They both pay about 10% of the going rate, so they don't care, but everybody else paying the other 90% is through the roof. You go to villages and you see kids hanging out around the schools or the village council offices because they have routers and they can get on their phones, their iPhones, and their smartphones. You talk about fishing, you talk about tourism, you talk about mining, you talk about every economic activity in this state. And all of us, all of them, rely more and more on telecommunications through broadband. And I don't think anybody's getting served now. I don't think there's any structure designed to increase the availability, bring the price down, and reliability. One of my neighbors was the vice president of the university for IT. He had to go to town to check his email. When you talk about doing business, no matter where you are, if you don't have access to that, you can't do business. So the question, direct question is, what of the broadband task force recommendations are being implemented?
Representative Guttenberg, through the chair, the broadband task force had completed their draft recommendations by last summer, and early in the new year they finalized it. If you don't have I'll just follow up through the committee staff to be sure that people have a copy of that. But there is continued progress, but there, when you look at the private sector and GCI's work from Terra Southwest coming around to Terra Northwest, they're continuing to build along the coastal communities up to Kotzebue, but I totally I recognize the cost concerns that Representative Guttenberg was mentioning. We also are fortunate we'll be seeing construction activity on the northern and north and northwestern part of the state and coastal areas with Quintillion as they do drops that will along the coastline that will connect Alaska to our Asian neighbors. He asked specifically about what recommendations in the broadband task force are being implemented. I point to two. One of them is the governor's has introduced the digital learning initiative, and I know that was pulled from the budget last year, but he has asked again for funding for that, and I think that it's not just education and commerce, but it's public safety, it's health. There's so many, it becomes fundamental when you look at connecting our communities to each other. So digital learning is one that is reflected. Also, as we do projects through ADA, such as the Ambler Road, we've already had contact with industry on the telecommunications side, as well as the mining industry and the communities, about how that could be completed with fiber laid. So when we look at major infrastructure projects, that's a recommendation that was in the broadband task force. While it's not something that has been formally adopted, in the work that we're doing now, we're looking to see how we can comply with that. So again, I know Representative Guttenberg had to step away. We'll follow up to ensure that you have a copy of the report, though.
Thank you. The three members from Fairbanks had a meeting with the governor, and they had to leave at 3:30. So, Representative Costello.
Thank you, and thank you for your presentation, Commissioner. We know from research and from other experiences that other states have that innovation is the way to grow the economy. And we recently had a session. We titled it, How Do You Grow Alaska's Economy? And I want to thank Robbie Graham for presenting for the department at that meeting. And the resounding, one of the things that we learned from that was Alaska shouldn't be trying to attract new business from outside and bring them here. We should focus on growing the existing businesses and new businesses within the state, grow our own with Alaskans, who are already here. And when you look around the country and you ask the question, what states have been incredibly successful in increasing their economic growth and their jobs, and it's in one of those states is Texas. And I've actually talked with members of the governor's office in Texas about those efforts, and what I think is so important as we move into a budget environment where we're seeing decline in the production, we're hoping we know it will increase, but there'll be a bridge period, that we need to be looking at how to grow our economy. And when you look at Texas, they brought, because it's so important and the jobs are so critical, that's at the heart of where government is, and it's in the governor's office. And so I'm focused a lot on how, you know, is it time to rethink how we do economic development? And then this weekend I was actually lost in Juneau, and I found a sign on a building way out of the way that said Division of Economic Development. And it ties into my question of, you know, when you talk about innovation, when you talk about what industries need and things like that, it seems like you would really want that division to be in the heart, either in the commissioner's office or where that ability to share information is, you can take advantage of that. And I know we'll have discussions in the budget subcommittee, but could you talk about that? I mean, is it time to rethink whether or not we start counting jobs versus business licenses, which I know that's what we do here in Alaska, but when jobs are so important to our economy, can we start doing things like what Texas is doing, which are getting results for them?
Through the chair, Representative Costello, I'd have to first step back to say that I appreciate that you brought us into your economic working group, because I think it was very valuable as we in the department were looking at other states, as we were looking at best practices, including a document that I know we shared widely internally and with the committee, Redesigning State Economic Development Agencies, a report that was produced last year by National Governors Association. It certainly touched on what has been mentioned this afternoon on public-private partnerships, the importance of aligning with the private sector. We've shared information on other states. We attend different conferences, including the International Economic Development Council, which will be in Anchorage next year, and Bill Popp and many people are working towards that. So we've been trying to use our resources, keep up with best practices, share information in the interim, and definitely talk with the private sector about their ideas. I think you're absolutely right. We're seeing people where there previously had been this big focus on site, on relocation, and sort of a tug of war who can out incentivize different industries to relocate. There's more of a focus on how do you grow what you have, what resources are a fit, what businesses, what skills, what are your strategic advantages. We also do need to attract external investment, though. So, you know, again, when you look at the many plans that we have in the private sector, in the public sector, we want to leverage. We want to be a place that's attractive to invest. So I agree with your point. Also, about the location of the Division of Economic Development, I just want to comment on that. We do have out of a division that has about almost 60 employees. 40 of them are based here in Juneau. Much of that, I go back to the two-thirds of the staff are the loan financing, the financing staff that are doing those commercial fishing loans, mariculture loans, micro loans, and they're serving the state. When I came into the department as commissioner, I know that we did secure a very affordable 10-year lease for that space. So that is a consideration. But so again, two-thirds of the staff are based in Juneau. Two-thirds of them are in order of magnitude loan financing staff that are co-located and working around the state. We certainly try to increase our visibility in Alaska and around the world for Alaska and the Department of Commerce, though. And I know we'll continue this conversation in subcommittee.
Thank you. We have time for one more question. We're already over. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, welcome.
Two quick questions.
Short questions. One is just a yes or no. Just to follow up on Representative Stoltz on that little brewery in Talkeetna. What happened on that was eventually, as you're aware of, I think I worked with you on it, is the ABC board said, well, we're going to have a gray area based on the fact that Alaska statutes say if you own a brewery license, like a microbrewery, you cannot also own a restaurant license. And so the ABC board came up with some changes in regulation, and the last I knew that I was told it was a gray area, but they were trying to slide through. Have they worked with you on trying to clarify that and getting rid of such ridiculous rules or statutes like that so that we can have entrepreneurs create jobs.
Through the chair, Representative Newman, I know the ABC board was working to try to make sure that stayed operational, and I do recall as that was brought to my attention, exactly as you described, that decisions were made by that business. They'd already constructed and opened their doors, and then it was an after the fact, which was very, very challenging. So I will personally check on that, but I know the efforts were to keep it operational.
No, my question was like, would you be interested in doing a bill to stop crazy laws like that? Secondly, Representative Osterman talked about the commercial fishery. The sport fishery is very, very important. Approximately, Department of Fish and Game, in a recent study, estimated at over $1 billion, about 1.25, about three-quarters of that right in the Cook Inlet region subdistrict. 2 years ago, the governor declared an economic disaster. Your deputy commissioner was at a meeting in Willow, was there specifically to try and help businesses, and there was business there from Kenai all the way on up, to help them through that economic stress. Not one business was assisted through the Department of Economic Development that I'm aware of through that, and it continues to be that way. And the promotion of that, again, through the tourism, people want to come to Alaska and catch a salmon or go catch some halibut, you know, tell their friends. And we don't see any of that advertisement in ASME to try and help with that, although they receive general fund monies. Can you respond to those?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, I know we've had not only personal conversations, but you've made some introductions to a number of your constituents. And in our tourism marketing program, we do certainly highlight what we have to offer as a state for sport fishing and recreation. And we've been talking about how through our website, our planner, and other things, we can help make sure that people know what we do have to offer. And match that to what's available. So that's one area. The other is I do know that having talked with a number of businesses that spent time with our staff and that, you know, the initial reaction by some was, why would I want to take a loan at a time when, at this kind of time? And I know I know people spent a lot of time looking at how we could assist them, and there are many heartfelt stories. It's not something we've forgotten. I know in December I had a chance to speak to the Chamber, to the Matsu Business Alliance, and others, and it's so valuable to get out there, and we're trying to think through our development programs what else we can do. So it's certainly not a forgotten issue.
Thank you, Ms. Sharon. The Board of Fisheries is meeting right now. We know there's been a discussion. It's tried to come up several times of the economic value, you know, how that affects communities and the allocations and stuff, and we've never heard anything from the department on that and how they would try and assist the department in those decisions.
We're going to have to stop today. I all of us are already late for other meetings, or most of us are. We have two bills before us tomorrow, House Bill 150, Technical Vocational Education Program, Representative Newman, and House Bill 31, previously before us last year, Constitutional History Curriculum. And we had a hearing on that and held it over, but we followed 5-day notice as we've had on all other bills previously heard from last year. Given that session is at 10:30 tomorrow, I'm going to probably recess the meeting and see about coming back, as I want to make sure that we have a continuity of the issue. So maybe come back at 1 o'clock. Thank you, Commissioner. And then in the afternoon, Representative Osterman, on the supplemental.
I think we do have the supplemental tomorrow afternoon. I'm looking at my staff to make sure we don't show it on our other. And then we've also show Department of Law for overview. Okay. Representative Munoz.
I was curious if we could get the bill packets the evening before we have a hearing, if that would be possible.
We will accommodate. Thank you. Any suggestions you have or any constructive criticisms, we will adapt to them. You heard that, Mr. George? Oh, there is no floor session tomorrow. It's just I just passed the note.
That's right, Thursday.
Is tomorrow Thursday? I'm a day early, so I'm no problems, Representative Newman.
All right, with that, we adjourn.